This is study number 23 in our camp meeting in Australia 1990. And now let us continue to study the healing in the wings of the Son of Righteousness that will arise. And in our last study, we have contemplated two kind of statements, or we have begun to contemplate two kind of statements. On the one hand, that God will heal directly. On the other hand, statements that speak of healing through the agencies of nature. And this kind of statement we read, for example, in page 127 in Ministry of Healing. Again, I will start with this paragraph under the headline Natural Remedies. Pure air, sunlight, abstemiousness, rest, exercise, proper diet, the use of water, trust in divine power, these are the true remedies. Every person should have a knowledge of nature's remedial agencies and how to apply them. It is essential both to understand the principles involved in the treatment of the sick and to have a practical training that will enable one right to use this knowledge. The use of natural remedies requires an amount of care and effort that many are not willing to give. Nature's process of healing and upbuilding is gradual, and to the impatient it seems slow. The surrender of hurtful indulgences requires sacrifice, but in the end it will be found that nature, untrammeled, does her work wisely and well. Those who persevere in obedience to her laws will reap the reward in health of body and health of mind. Good. Now, we have two kind of statements. The one which talks that God is the only one that heals. We will write this down a little bit. Only God heals. And here, restorative power in agency. Or in nature. Good. Then, we know from the life of Christ that he usually healed immediately, didn't he? When he said to the paralytic, stand up, he stood up. It didn't take long, didn't take even an hour, not even a minute, but just a few seconds. He stood up and there he was in his health. So on this side then we have immediate healings. And what do we have on the other side? Let's read this again. The use of natural remedies requires an amount of care and effort that many are not willing to give. That didn't take the paralytic much effort to stand up, did it? After he was healed, I mean. He just stood up. But not so with the use of natural remedies. It requires an amount of care and effort that many are not willing to give. Nature's process of healing and upbuilding is gradual. And to the impatient, it seems slow. So how do the healings come about when nature is applied? Slow healing. Yeah, that's why you need patience. But here, that is immediate, and here it knows it is slow and needs much patience. Furthermore, you need a lot of effort. In other words, you need treatment on this side. Do you need treatment on that side? No. No treatment. Yeah, what about the blind men who Jesus anointed with clay? That was treatment. Well, it was not instant, it took time. Well, it wasn't slow healing, that is true, but it was a process. And it was a treatment involved. So, in one case where Jesus healed, we find that he used natural agencies, that it took time, and that he used treatment. But mostly, when Jesus healed, did he use a treatment? Very seldom. So, mostly applied by Christ. And where treatment was involved was seldom applied by Christ. But even if he applied it once, which he did, he sanctified this too, didn't he? Good. Now, these two kinds of healing, the slow healing and the immediate healing, seem to stand in contradiction with each other.
but they are not. Now the key understanding of the harmonizing of these two different ways, if they are two different ways, but they are not, then is the understanding of the healing of the soul. Now both the healing of the soul and the healing of the body require the same procedures, require the same power. Therefore, what kind of procedures are required in the healing of the soul from sin? Does this happen immediately or does this take time? Well, yeah. Okay, so in other words, we have two kind of works, haven't we? The one work is the rebirth experience, and how long does it take? That is an instant healing, otherwise called, in the spirit of prophecy,
revival.
Now, when the rebirth is accomplished, is this all that is needed to be totally free from sin, from all sins? No, there are wrong ideas and theories, there are false habits or practices. And to get rid of them, how long does it take? A long time, the whole lifetime, doesn't it? So on this side we have, not revival, but reformation. And that takes time. Now, of course, in the process of reformation, as we will learn soon, there are also immediately healings. There need to be immediate healings of spiritual sin. Other things, until we get free from them, it takes longer because it is necessary first that the Lord reveals us wrong concepts, and that may take quite some time because it's a hard time for the Lord to deliver us from false ideas at times, isn't it? Very hard work. We think it's so easy to change our thinking, but it's very, very difficult. For Moses it was a struggle as for life to give up his old ideas. And so it took him 40 years in the wilderness. For Paul, it took him also several years in the wilderness. And so likewise, it will take for us quite some time to get rid of some of the things, while others we will see that we find immediately deliverance from. But one thing is sure, and this is that from the old carnal mind, we receive immediately deliverance. This is always the case. Now, when we have two works in the deliverance from sin, what must be there in the deliverance from sickness? Also two works, the same thing. So there must first be a revival experience and then a reformation experience. Now, the revival experience in the spiritual area, when does it take place? At the entering of our Christian life, doesn't it? When we begin the Christian life, that's at the beginning, and it's an immediate healing. The question now is, when does the physical revival take place? It must also be at the not necessarily at the same time. One can experience spiritual revival without physical revival, but it can also be at the beginning of our Christian life if we understand that the gospel is for both the physical and the spiritual needs. If we don't understand it, of course, then it might be very well that we just experience deliverance from our sin, but not deliverance from our sickness.
No, I understand.
Pardon?
I understand it's good.
Yeah.
Reformation begins
when. Yeah. Okay, good. We will come back to this in a minute. Let us now turn, first of all, to the spiritual reformation. Now, the spiritual reformation takes a lot of effort, doesn't it? And care. In fact, it says in the Great Controversy that by God's grace and our own diligent efforts, we must be conquerors in the battle with evil. Where does it say this? On page 425. Thank you. There it says, their robes must be spotless, their characters must be purified from sin by the blood of sprinkling through the grace of God and their own diligent effort, they must be conquerors in the battle with evil. Great Controversy, page 425. So by God's grace and their own diligent effort, they must be conquerors in the battle with evil. While the investigative judgment is going forward in heaven, while the sins of penitent believers are being removed from the sanctuary, there is to be a special work of purification, of putting away of sin among God's people upon the earth. Now this work requires God's grace and our own diligent effort, an effort that few are willing to give. Now in child salvation, it's the same thing. To acquire the rebirth of our children is just but the first step. Now what follows after this must be a very diligent effort, and God's grace as well. Now, an effort that few are willing to give. If I am correct in my observation, I can see that people in the world generally are taking too little effort and too little time for the education of their children. Of course, they are not born again either. Then even if they would take effort into the education of their children, they still would not become perfect. But the tendency is to be happy about children when one has them first, like a new present, and then when they are there for a time, they are more a hindrance to the normal lifestyle, and so they are treated. In other words, the parents continue with their work and with everything, and the children are more or less keeping them up. So they must be nourished, they must be fed, okay, everybody accepts this, but it is more done as a duty than as a real interest and real engagement. Do you say engagement? To be engaged in something as a real commitment. Now those who really understand their duty as parents, they will never permit this happen. They will understand that the rearing of their children is the most important work, and they will give this the primary and greatest attention. They will give it much prayer, they will give it much thought, and they will also do everything in the fear of God in order to bring up the children in the faith. And the same is required also in our own sanctification. Usually it happens when we have received our rebirth that then we think, okay, we are Christians, what more do we want? We have it. If we would die now and we have the new life in us, that's all that matters. But if we have this attitude, we will never come to the wonderful aim of getting perfection of character, of finishing the work. There's much thought required. In fact, we need to be very diligent students of the message. We must not let the opportunities to study the message slip by. We must apply ourselves very earnestly to it and must become intelligent. It is sometimes discouraging to see how people who have known how they have received their rebirth are then so slow in learning some things, some simple things of the message, like Sabbath rest and so forth. And one sees how the people are defeated again and again and again. And of course, it's discouraging also when we look to ourselves. Now, that does not need to be. We have such a rich knowledge within our reach, which we can utilize, which we can use. We can work on it and ask ourselves at each step, am I going really according to the message? And if we do this, then we will become really wise. We will get an understanding about life that those do not understand who are careless in this respect. And the same applies in the physical. Now, when we are careless about the laws of our body and think, well, we are quite healthy, therefore, what need is there to understand about water, pure air, sunshine, rest, abstemiousness, and so forth? Then we will never receive this health that Jesus had. In fact, that is the problem of the healthful person, isn't it? Healthy person, I mean. The person who is healthy, he feels, why should I look into natural agencies? Why should I understand the use of water, the use of Eob and about rest and diet and so forth, I'm quite well. Now, if we think like this, then, of course, we will never acquire this perfect health, because both is necessary for our perfection in spiritual as well as in physical, which is first revival and then reformation. Now again, let us look at the point of reformation. As in the spiritual, so in the physical. Revival is a work done once in the beginning of our Christian life. And so, the gift of health, the immediate gift of health, is an experience that we need once in the beginning of our life with Christ as our doctor. That requires that conscientiously, really conscientiously, we make God our doctor in the beginning. So it means that we go to God as our doctor, whether we are healthy or whether we are sick, it doesn't matter. Now, most of us who are here are quite healthy. Some are sick. Now we both are really sitting in the same boat. Because even though we seem to be quite healthy at the moment, we are so degenerated in this time that we can say that we are sick, really. Nobody is perfect healthy. Nobody. Everybody has something, at least. And we have the seed of sickness already in us, through which we will eventually die, even if it's in the age of 70 or 80 or above that. Now the point is that we all can make God our doctor. And if we make God our doctor, make a covenant with Him and receive the seed of health, as we receive the seed of righteousness, then we have the gift of health in ourselves as we have the gift of righteousness in ourselves. This must be followed, of course, by a work of reformation, by understanding how to keep our body healthy and so forth. But now the great promise is that when God is our doctor, that then we will not only be healed, but we will be saved from receiving sickness. This point is made very clear in Exodus 15. Wait a moment, was it 15? 15, the last verse. Yep. There it says in verse 26, "If you diligently heed the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in His sight, give ear to His commandments and keep all His statutes, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have brought on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you." In German it says, "I am the Lord your doctor." I am the Lord your doctor. Now, when God is our doctor, what has He promised? He has promised to put none of the diseases on us which He brought on the Egyptians. Now that would mean if a person would be physically born again, I say now, in other words, if he would have the seed of health right from the beginning, from his earliest moments, that he would be able to live the same healthful life of Christ. Was Christ one time sick? Not once. Of course, he suffered severe burdens through the efforts of Satan to destroy him, but he was never sick. He didn't have one flu, did he? He didn't have headache. He didn't have other diseases. He was in himself health and strength. So he was absolutely healthy. Now when Jesus was this, can we be? Certainly, because Jesus is the perfect example. Now that means that we could have the same. But this requires, of course, that right from the beginning we would have the gift of health. Now that now is a quite interesting knowledge for parents who are in expectancy of children. Now we have learned that the children can be born again from the earliest moments. And we learned when they are born again from the earliest moments that thereby they are saved a lot of troubles because once sin finds entrance in the soul, it begins immediately to damage and to destroy and to fasten the person in its grip. And the same is true of sickness. Immediately when we are born, we have the seed of sickness in us, inherited through generations of sinful practices. In other words, because of sinful practices since Adam, we are so degenerated that everyone already is in one way or another sick. And if we become older, then sooner or later we die of one of these sicknesses, be it cancer or whatever. Now, the point is that Jesus, right from the earliest moment, had the gift of health in himself. And the same can be true for other children. That is, when they are born, the parents can pray for them as they pray for their rebirth, and they can receive the seed of health as they can receive the seed of righteousness. And if this is properly done by faith and according to the spoken word of God, who will create this gift of health in the children, then you can be sure that this children will be spared of all the sicknesses of the Egyptians. They just will not become sick, as they will not become sinful when they have the gift of righteousness in themselves. Now, this must be so because the work of saving from sin is the same work as the saving from sickness. And the same is true also in the spiritual realm. If we want our children to have perfect peace, perfect Sabbath rest, and never experience wretchedness, like Christ never experienced wretchedness, did he? He was always at peace. Of course, he had great temptations, but he never lost his peace. Now, if we want this, what do we need at the beginning? The gift of peace, the seed of peace. So we must understand now that in the same way as Jesus gave health, so did he give peace, so did he give perfection of character, which required in the realm of the soul first the rebirth, which can happen from the earliest moments, and it requires the seed of righteousness. Here it requires the seed of peace, and here it requires the seed of health. Now, in the realm of our physical bodies, it requires, of course, that first of all, we make a covenant with God that He alone is our doctor. Now, that is quite a solemn covenant to make. By the way, in the physical, it requires that we make a covenant with God that He alone is our righteousness. How do we come to the point where we really receive our rebirth? What are the three steps of conversion again? Repentance, faith, and baptism. So we receive repentance, first of all. And repentance we get by understanding how impossible it is in our own strength to overcome sin. When we make this experience of Romans 7, of trying and falling and trying and falling and trying and falling, and even though we try so hard and we fall yet, then we will begin to understand, in our own strength we can't. And then we will cry out, wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from the body of this death? Now let's take this in our bodies. What do we try very hard before we come to God, our doctor, usually? Don't we try very hard by running to this doctor and that doctor and that doctor? And if we are cured of doctors, we are trying this remedy, that remedy, and this remedy. And nothing helps. Until we come to the place where we are desperate and we say, O wretched man I am, who will deliver me from the physical body of this death? Who will deliver me of the body of the sickness, I should rather say. And then, of course, the gospel tells us very clearly that God himself offers to be our healer or our doctor. And then we make him our doctor, which means that we give up all the other ways of healing before. We give them up. We just say it's impossible to get health through these ways. Now, when we are quite healthy, we are tempted not to make this covenant. But when we have tried out all the other means and they failed, then often people come to this place where they say, "Oh, wretched man I am, who will deliver me from the body of the sickness." But we can be glad that even today, as we understand these principles, we can make God our doctor, make this covenant, make Him alone our doctor, and be determined not to be unfaithful to Him, even if it should cost our life. That means quite something. It means that we do not in any way try to use these old ways of healing again, but only stick to the one way of healing art that heaven approves, that when we have a sickness, we do not try a remedy, this, that, or the other, but that immediately we go to the doctor first. Now, the natural tendency, of course, of a human being is, when we get any sickness, that first of all we try something. In fact, if I would get a flu, immediately you would come to me and say, "Try eucalyptus, try lemon, try this, try that," wouldn't you? Now, of course, a flu is a thing where we know that certain agency can apply it. But what I want to stress, what I mean, is this point. Instead of advising each other first to go to the doctor and then use remedies according to the prescription of the doctor, we tend to run to the remedies first. And that's a definite mistake. It means that God is not our doctor, but either we ourselves, or if we run to other doctors, another doctor. Again, let's ask ourselves the question, what do we do when we become sick, naturally? Isn't our first reaction, "Oh, I must go to the doctor," or "Oh, I must apply this or that"? That's a natural first reaction. But we must come to the place, and in fact we will come to the place when we make this covenant with God, where our first reaction is, "I go to my doctor." Now, in the natural world, I mean in the world of physical doctors, it is very important that you do not try out something, but you go to the doctor. It's distressing for a physician if a patient, instead of coming to him, he tries out this, that, and the other. And then when he has tried out all things and has virtually destroyed himself, then in the end he comes to the doctor and says, "Please help me." And the doctor says, "Why haven't you come to me firsthand? I could have told you." It's distressing for a physician. Put yourself in the place of a physician. It's really distressing if people doctor about themselves. Now, how distressing, how frustrating it must be for our divine physician if instead of coming to him first, we try out this, that, and the other. Isn't this distressing for him? Let's remember that he is much more able than we are. Much more able. And let's remember that if we have something in the realm of health, it is our privilege to go to the doctor first. And if God is our doctor, we go to him and to nobody else, but to him and him alone. Now this step, this covenant to make with our divine doctor, is our privilege to do at one stage of our life. It could go together with our rebirth experience, and that would be the ideal. But since we did not understand the health message before, it usually happened or happens later. Even now it may be that we have not made this definite covenant. But think about this truth over. And think, if you do not want to make this covenant with God and receive the gift of health from Him, as you receive the gift of righteousness. And as we receive it, we will see that we have the power of health in us, which is an antidote to sickness. And you will find yourself not becoming sick so easily as you did become before. It does not mean, of course, that we do not become sick at all, because we have already been very much degraded through a life under the power of sickness. And now we must go the work of reformation, as in the realm of sin. It also does not mean that we do not sin anymore once we have been delivered from the power of sin, does it? But what does it mean? It means that from this point on we will overcome one sin after another. So likewise, once we have received the gift of health, first of all, we have the antidote against sickness in us. And second, we will see that we will receive victory over one sickness after another. This is what God purposes. But for this, we first must experience physical revival, as we received spiritual revival in the beginning. Now, on what basis do we understand that this is so? What is the reason for it? We must really understand that this is so. The reason is that the procedures for healing the body is the same as for healing the soul. It's the same thing. Maybe if you don't understand fully the procedures for healing from sin, then I would recommend you to read again the book First From Bondage to Freedom, and then the book Revival and Reformation. In fact, the book Revival and Reformation also includes the work of revival. So if you study the book Revival and Reformation, you see these two works. First revival and then reformation. And now, when the procedures of healing of sin are the same as of healing from sickness, then in the area of healing from sickness, there must also be first revival and then reformation. So ask yourself the question now, even now, have I really received my physical revival? In fact, we have learned in the past that God is our doctor, but we tended to apply this for single sicknesses, didn't we? For this sickness and that sickness and that sickness. But before we have not really received physical revival, our healing from several sicknesses does not really work either. So the first step must be then physical revival. And this includes, let us emphasize this again, that God is our doctor. As Christ is our righteousness, so Christ must be our physician. In the same way, precisely. Now, when we have a sin problem, we understand very well we cannot overcome it by trying very hard to overcome it, can we? And when we have a health problem, we must understand we cannot overcome it by this, that, and the other. But we overcome it, first of all, by going to Christ, our doctor. But then, once we are with Christ, our doctor, let's suppose now we have made him our doctor and we have received the gift of health, and we need now deliverance from certain ailments, and natural remedies are required. Who will prescribe these natural remedies? The physician. He must prescribe the remedies. Again, who is the physician? God is the physician. Now, when God prescribes the remedies, then it is up to us to diligently apply them. Now, that is the reason why we also must become acquainted with the natural remedies, because they are the prescriptions in the hand of the great physician. Now, it is, of course, a certain kind of danger that when we become very well acquainted with prescriptions or with natural remedies, that when a sickness comes up, that we turn to these in order to get healing. It's a danger, isn't it? Instead of going to the physician first and let him prescribe it. In other words, whatever may be the problem, let us go the safe way, which is go to the physician first, and then apply the prescriptions that he reveals or has revealed already to us. But make sure that they are applied under the guidance of the great physician. If this is not the case, then again we take the work of God into our own hands, and the result will not be success. I hope you can understand this point. It is important that we understand natural remedies, but they must be prescribed under the direction of the great physician, which requires, again, that we have a close connection to him, that he is able to speak to us his words and tells us, now use this prescription. Because, well, he may not say what the problem is. He may not give if you first go to the doctor, he examines you And he gives a diagnosis. Thank you. Diagnosis. So God may not give an exact diagnosis, but he gives a prescription. God knows already what the diagnosis is. He knows the diagnosis even before we became sick, doesn't he? Because he knows everything in advance. So when we come to him, we know for sure that he has the right diagnosis. If we come to another doctor, of course, the diagnosis is very liable to be wrong. In fact, in many cases, the diagnosis is wrong, isn't it? When we come to an earthly doctor. This you can find when you go from one doctor to another and each one gives a different diagnosis. That is very usually the case, isn't it? It's very rare that two doctors give the same diagnosis. And this is evidence that the diagnosis we receive here is mostly wrong. But God never gives a wrong diagnosis. So let us understand, when we are diseased, that first we need the gift of health, and when we have this, and then a problem comes up, then we have the great privilege to go to our divine doctor who has the diagnosis already and who has the right prescription. Now, our work in cooperating with the divine physician in the healing is, of course, like the work of a nurse. Again, in the worldly sphere, the nurse had certain limitations, and it is very important that the nurse sticks to these limitations. A nurse, for example, is never allowed to prescribe something. What she exercises, she must do exactly under the directions and prescriptions of the physicians. That's very essential. If she wouldn't do that, she would be fired, wouldn't she? So likewise, we have the work of a nurse. We must exercise carefully what the Lord prescribes, but under his directions and under his prescriptions. So let us understand these principles. About these principles, we want to study a little bit more in our next study this evening. We want to really understand that the work of spiritual restoration is the same as of physical and mental restoration. And in this way, I'm sure, we not only receive a balanced view of the true medical missionary work, but we will now take certain steps to really make God our doctor alone and to receive the gift or the seed of health, which the Lord desires to give each one of us.